Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors, a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Welcome to a very exciting halcyon day here in the Good Listening To Show clearing. It is my absolute delight and pleasure to welcome Neil Stringer, known as the Copy Doctor, living the digital nomad dream. He's based enigmatically in Southeast Asia, and we met recently because of his prowess as a copy doctor, where his raison d'etre is, as he says of his own volition on his LinkedIn profile, "My copy gives your offer, product or service a megaphone." So here is the Copy Doctor, and we're going to be doing a founder story stroke legacy life reflections sort of dual thing in what we're recording here. So Neil Stringer, welcome to the Good Listening To Show.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here. It's been a few nerves in the run-up to it because yes, this is so different. And the way I'm going to talk today is very different.
Yes.
But why I wanted to be here today is I'm into, well, should anybody in business, into building relationships. And building relationships, I find, are enhanced greatly by transparency. And so I want to spend some time today introducing you or telling you who I am. Not what I do. Anybody knows what I do, you know, with the marketing and the copy and all that sort of good stuff. But really giving you a chance to get to know a little bit about who Neil is. Wonderful. So that's what I'm here for.
And that fits perfectly with my founding premise 5 years ago with this whole construct. Everybody has an interesting story to tell, provided you give them the courtesy of a damn good listening to. And I'm particularly interested in not the transactional stuff, but the story behind the story. And as you said, yeah, we wanted to frame this with everything you've ever wanted to know about the Copy Doctor, but too afraid to ask, is the sort of Hollywood film version of what we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we've enigmatically said you're in Southeast Asia. You did say a couple of minutes ago you don't like to particularly pin yourself down specifically. Just tell us the story behind the story of why you've decided to base yourself in Southeast Asia.
Well, let's call it what it is. I'm in Central Vietnam. there's a change from that. I came here about 9.5 years or so ago. I was on the way to Australia to spend some time working with a particular set of clients. And I came here, I got to Saigon, Ho Chi Minh City, absolutely couldn't stand the place. It was like a sensory sort of overload with all the little motorbikes like hornets buzzing everywhere, pavements, and I didn't like it at all. And so I wanted to come up to where I am in the center of Vietnam, and I thought, if this is good, great. If it's the same as there, I'm on the next flight out to Australia. And I came, and I really, really liked it. And I really like the people. And I'm going to talk more about that a little later. But I found that this was somewhere I was quite happy to be. I didn't speak the language. I'd never been here before. But somehow it's as a place or an environment, and me just clicked. And so I thought, okay, I'll stay for a few months and things. You know, you have to be careful and sort out immigration stuff and get all that done right. And then we ran into COVID and the place was locked down. You couldn't travel anywhere if you wanted to for 3 years. So all the visa stuff went out of the window. And the funny story was, the day I was supposed to get my kind of yearly visa, the sort of the semi-permanent visa, they changed the rules and I had to fly outside of Vietnam to get the visa stuck into my passport. So I thought, I'm not going to go to Bangkok where everybody else goes. I thought, I'll go to Phnom Penh in Cambodia because that's city next door. And I wanted to do things like go and see one of the many killing fields and all that sort of stuff. It's not fun, but it's something that I thought I can't be in this part of the world and not do.
Yes.
You know?
A bit like being in Krakow and whether you decide to go into the Auschwitz or not. Yes, indeed.
Exactly. It's just something I felt that I should do. And so I got to Phnom Penh on the Monday night. The letter from immigration, my accountants faxed to my hotel and also to the embassy. Tuesday morning, I went to the embassy and they said, here's the funny thing. He said, okay, it'll cost you, I don't know, whatever it was, $50 or whatever, and come back in 3 days. And I said, oh, no. I said, I'm not going to be in Cambodia with no bloody passport. There's a table and chair there. I'm going to sit there until you've done it. And if I have to sit there for 3 days, so be it. And so they go, chunna amongst themselves. And they said, what do you want? I said, I want it done now. All you've got to do, you've got the letter from Hanoi. You've got everything done. I'll give you the money. You've got my passport. Just stick the damn thing in and let's be done with this. So they said, okay, then it'll be $250. So I said, that's okay. I just paid the cash. 7 minutes it took them to get my visa. I can't say this is Vietnam because that might get me into trouble. But in this part of the world, there's ways of doing things, shall we say. And
so you grease the wheels of red tape.
I can't possibly comment. You might think that, but I can't, as they would say in House of Cards, Richardson would say, I can't possibly comment. So I had my driver that I booked for just to run me around everywhere. I said, I want to go to the killing fields and things. So we did that for the afternoon. And then I had an uneasy feeling in my stomach. And I've learned over the decades to listen to that uneasy feeling in the bottom of your stomach. So I called my, who was then girlfriend back here, who had booked the tickets with her friend for me to go and then come back anyway. And I was supposed to go back to Hoi An on the Saturday or the Sunday, whatever it was. I said, get me on the next available plane out of here. So she said, there's not one till tomorrow morning. I said, okay, just get me on it. And she said, well, it goes to Saigon. It doesn't go to where you are. So you're going to have to hang around for a few hours at the airport there.
And just go back to that. This is COVID that's causing this pressure of the desire to get out.
No, COVID was starting to be talked about, shall we say.
Yes.
And we all knew about it, but everybody was still traveling and doing. No. So anyway, I got back into Vietnam. I'm in Saigon now, a few hours away from home. And the day after, on the Wednesday, Vietnam closed all its borders.
Ooh.
So if I hadn't listened to that gut feeling in my stomach, God, the universe, whatever you want to class it as, I'd have been stuck in Cambodia for 3 years.
Wow. Yes.
That wouldn't have been the end of the world, except all my stuff and everything was here, not there. And so...
And where do you think that sort of gut instinct came from in terms of how you've rationalized it since? Because you just woke up feeling unsettled, like you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, about to be stuck. Is that the idea?
I will say as far as, that is the idea. I'll say as far as this is concerned, which is not something I've ever said before, that came from God. I am a man of faith. Very, very seldom, if I'm talking to clients, do I ever mention God or faith or anything, because that's not my job. I'm made to do a specific thing. But you ask the question, this is a podcast of transparency or honesty. That feeling, I believe, came from upstairs.
And in your life, have you experienced a sort of visceral gut instinct shift of narrative often?
Yes and no. That's the easiest way to say yes and no. There's been times in life when I've been aware that somebody or something's got me out of the toilet, if you like.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I say to myself when I have bad times, so we all have bad times, one of which you referred to before we came on that we're not going to talk about now. One of the things that occurs to me, if God, the universe, the divine, it can be the doorknob if that's where your faith is. If the doorknob, if the universe... Well, that's my problem with the 12-step program.
I do like that, by the way. We should always have faith in our doorknob because it is the way out.
Exactly. No, well, I never thought of that. But, if you're going to call it your hidden power or unseen power, or whatever, give the thing a name, whatever it happens to be. But no, I'm aware. One of the things that's kept me going over the decades.
You know what? We could have formed a new cult today called the Doorknob Cult. You never know.
We could. The doorknob, it's the way out. I think that's brilliant. I wish I'd thought of it. But no, what I was going to say was, I'm aware that somebody or something over the decades has got me out of some scrapes. And one of the verses in the Bible says, be ye not deceived, God is not mocked. If God's not going to get me out of today's scrape, it makes a mockery of all the scrapes he got me out of in the past.
Yeah.
And that's simple logic, and it might not mean or count for much with 99% of the people who are listening to this, but it counts for something with me, and it's my story, so that's all that matters.
Yes, and it resonates beautifully with that, and this too shall pass, which is biblical, but also everybody relates to it. So there's certainly wisdom that's relatable across all religions, and there are versions of and this too shall pass across religions, actually.
Well, one of the things that I have, and this isn't in my plan, but I have a master's degree in theology and comparative religion. So I'm familiar with most of the sacred works out there. And you'd be amazed how many similarities there are.
Yes. It's all about the human condition.
Well, it's about man writing or wanting to talk about or describe things of which he has no comprehension. I live in a Buddhist culture. Now, I'm not Buddhist, but I love Buddhism in the sense that to the people here who are very devout, Buddhism isn't a religion per se. It's a code for life. It's very Christian. And in fact, in some cases, some of the outworkings of people who live a Buddhist lifestyle are a lot more devout and a lot more, I don't know even know what the word is, than some of the Christians I could introduce you to.
There's hypocrisy across religion.
Yeah, there is. And not so much here, or at least in the environment that I live in now.
Sure. This is all wonderful stuff because we're getting deliberately existential anyway, which is actually the point. So why don't we get on the open road of me curating you through the structure now? If you're listening to this show for the first time, just to give a bit of positioning here, this is the show in which I invite movers, makers, shakers, mavericks, influencers, and also personal heroes, every man, every woman, into a clearing or serious happy place of my guest's choosing, as together we share their stories of distinction and genius. So, Neil Stringer, I'm going to take you through the curation of a clearing, a tree, a lovely, juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1. There's going to be some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, a golden baton, and a cake. So it's all to play for. Your invitation is to go where you like, how you like, as deep as you like, when you like, if you like, through this structure. Thank you for positioning so brilliantly that you're here to talk about all things to do with everything you wanted to know, which you're giving us by the bucket load already about the copy doctor, the story behind the story.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Let's get on the open road. Neil Stringer, where is what is a clearing for you? Where is your serious happy place? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational, and able to think?
I have a main one and a backup one. My main one is what I fondly call my Zen zone. In the house I live in, it was built with a lot of input from me design-wise. Where I am, I can't own property because I'm a foreigner, I'm not allowed to, but it was built for me primarily. That's the front building where I am now and sleeping, cooking, living and all the rest of it. Then there's a courtyard area. And then there's the back building where my guest suite or my brother's room would be in the laundry area. And in that middle open area place, there's 2-meter walls, 6-foot walls on either side. So it's totally private and totally enclosed. And there's a pool in there. Now, it's not a lap pool that I can swim in. If I want to swim, it'd take me 5 or 6 strokes. That's it. But I don't swim. I lounge in there. I float in there. That's my space where I think. You'd be amazed how many of my creative ideas come from that place. You'd be amazed how much copy I write with my elbows on the side of that place. And if I'm really honest, you'd be amazed how many calls I make to clients from in the pool.
And I have experienced that firsthand. I have spoken to you when you're sitting around.
Right. It depends who I'm talking to and what I think their reaction's going to be.
Yes.
But that's my space, my private space, my happy place. That's my Zen zone. I call it the Zen zone. When I'm writing posts or in emails, I always refer to the Zen zone. That's it.
Of all my circa 250 episodes, no one's ever described their clearing as their Zen zone. So I love that. Thank you.
What do you say on your, you ask people on your other podcasts I'm listening, well, is your happy place, where do you go to get clutter free? immediately came to mind, well, that's going to be my Zen zone. The second or the backup would be the beach. Now, ironically, I don't like the sand. It gets everywhere. You can't take your electronics onto the beach. Oh, no, it's nasty.
A lot of people would say you can't bring your electronics into the swimming pool area either, but you've obviously got something set up there.
Yes, I can control that. I cannot control grains of sand. But there's a couple of nice restaurant, bistro-type things that are literally on the beach. And I like to go there early or mid-morning and stay there, have brunch and stay there for a few hours. I can take my iPad, I can write, I can think, I can watch the scenery go by, if you see what I mean. So those are my two spaces.
And I love the fact you've got a cunning plan B in there as well, which is very Baldric of you to have two. So there has been some building work, I gather, of late recently in your dwelling next door. So presumably you've been at the beach pad a bit more often.
Yeah, I usually make a habit of going for a few hours once a week and sometimes twice.
Yes.
But that's my space.
So if I may, can I choose the Zen zone as being the one we anchor to? Because I think that's where you're most creative. That's where the copy
you can.
The sort of magic of what you weave hums from that Zen zone.
Let's just segue and explain the name copy doctor just for 1 second.
Sure, sure.
I have a PhD in clinical counselling and things, hence the doctor bits, which is a title I can properly and regularly use should so I choose. But I sort of retired in 2015 and started writing copy in 2016, copy marketing. One of the advantages I get is because I have a lot of PhD level psychology training and all the rest of it, I know how people think. But if you know how people think, it's relatively easy to motivate them to take a course of action that you'd like them to take. Persuasion, if you like.
Yes.
Notice I said persuasion, not manipulation.
I noticed that. Yep.
And for the longest time, I was struggling, caught between a rock and a hard place. Am I the copy guy? Am I Dr. Neil? Am I the counselor, the therapist, the coach, the life coach or whatever? And then a sometime mentor of mine said, I've got this. Call yourself a copy doctor.
Boom.
That you need that. You don't expect. See on LinkedIn. You can be copy or you can be the therapy. You can't be both. You have one profile. And so he's a guy called Johnny Cooper said that. He said, Neil, issues just hit me. Be the copy doctor. If nothing else, nobody else can call themselves that.
I love the fact you've amplified Johnny Cooper. He's somebody else I'm connected to, and he's going to be in my show in a few weeks' time as well, actually. So I love the fact that you're
talking. I beat him.
Also, you're onto something anyway, and what I know about teaching on personal brand, which is we need to have something called an operator word, which makes people go, wait, what? So copy doctor is very clever in the same way I call myself a motivational comedian. It's something that makes people go, wait, what?
I'm just about to start next week, a weekly. It's going to be a Facebook Live because I don't know how to do the tech for podcasts with my eyesight and technical hand. It'll just be a Facebook Live. But it's going to be called the Copy Doctor Prescription. And every week, we're going to take a symptom and we're going to diagnose the symptom and come up with a treatment. So, and that's going to start next week. And that actually, if you remember my post about the epiphany the other day, about having listened to that, the sentence he said or the phrase he said was, it's time to move. Now, he was talking about moving as in getting physical, but this had been niggling in the back of my mind and a couple of people have been saying, why don't you? That was my decision. That's why I'm going to move and we start next week.
And thank you for that. You're referring to the Roger Black episode that I did in this podcast where he said that. And thank you for reminding me of that.
And in fact, in my Facebook post, I told everybody to go to your website and listen to it and then call me if they worked it out.
Wonderful.
So
rather brilliantly, when I first came up with the Golden Baton idea, that very episode was the first time I passed Roger Black the Golden Baton. When he'd only won silver in the Olympics.
And he was going to... Yeah, but he won gold in 2 world championships.
Oh, so I'm taking nothing away. He's an absolute legend of an athlete.
I can't wait to see if you get Akabusi on. But anyway, we digress.
So thank you for choosing the clearing. Also, I'm glad you've shared the epiphany and also why we are calling you or referring to your beautiful operator word of the copy doctor. It makes complete sense. Lovely. So here we are then in the copy doctor's Zen zone. I'm now going to arrive with a tree in your clearing. And I hope you don't mind me trying to bring a shrubbery. Oh, the shrubbery into your Zen zone. And we're going to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out now. This is where you've had 5 minutes to have thought about four things that have shaped you, three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention. When I revisit that in a moment, I'll talk about the squirrels. And then the one is a quirky or unusual fact about you, copy Dr. Neil Stringer. It's not a memory test, so over to you. First of all, four things that have shaped you.
Right. Well, the first three things, I guarantee that nobody listening to this knows about me. The fourth one, they will, but will. My first one, I thought about this, and I only changed this on my notes this morning. The first thing that shaped me has to be my upbringing. You know, my parents, there was two of us, my brother and I. He's a couple of years younger than me, but he and I, and our parents, we lived together. It was, for the most part, a happy home. There was trouble and strife from time to time, in the same way that there is in any family dynamic. My brother and I, we had loving parents, did their best for us. They gave us the best that they possibly could, and that was that. My dad was a locksmith, so he never made a lot of money. My mother was a deputy head in a school, so she was the one that made the family money. And so because of that and because of their attitudes, we got to do things. We went on holidays. We did all, you know, we had a good home. It was also a Christian home. We were brought up, we were taken to church until or unless we were old enough to make a decision for ourselves. And the church, our family church, was the Salvation Army. Now, a lot of people don't recognize that as a church. They know the social programs and all the rest of it. They were a church first and foremost. The outworking of their Christianity is the social stuff. And we were taken there, and that was fine. There was a load of kids our age there. We had a great life with the youth clubs and all the rest of it. And that was where I learned to play a brass instrument. You know, you may or may not know the Salvation Army of the brass bands and things. And that was very important to me. And later when I got to go to secondary school, well, to the grammar school, you know, I spent a lot of time. The reason I chose that grammar school, which I had to pass an exam to get in, was because they had a brass band and an orchestra. And by the time I'd finished my grammar school life, you know, I was in three brass bands, the Salvation Army, one at the school, one and a regional one. And I used to play trumpet in the orchestra as well. And in fact, the highlight or the peak of my musical playing career was standing in front of a full orchestra playing the Haydn trumpet concerto with no music, three movements, no music. Wow. That was the peak or the height of my...
A trumpet solo for three movements.
Yeah, a full concerto written by Haydn, Joseph Haydn.
And with no other music apart from you on the trumpet. So you're talking about a solo.
With an orchestra behind me.
Sorry, it's because you said with no music. Oh, I see. Sorry, you weren't reading music. You're just doing it from memory.
No sheet music. Yeah, wow. Played from memory.
Wow.
And that was the height of my skill level. And it was the most terrifying thing I ever did. And then I said, as soon as I sat down after that, I said, I'll never do it again. So anyway, that was the epitome, if you like, of my practical music thing. And in fact, I was good enough. I was auditioning for several universities, and also I went down to the Royal College of Music behind the old Albert Hall to see if I could get entrance there. And this is what I was going to do. And I was going to stay on at school for a gap year, but as a sort of peripatetic music teacher employed by the school, teaching kids to play. And then that's when it hit me. There's three things. We're all human beings, right? And there's three things we do. We have a profession. And I don't mean you're a professional as in you're an architect or you're a lawyer or you're a profession as in we do something to make money. The next level up in life comes when we have a vocation. That's when we understand what our big why is and things elevate from a profession to a vocation. For example, I think nurses, teachers, good ones, have to have a vocation, not a profession.
Yes.
But there's another, and I realized that teaching music for 40 hours a week wasn't playing in various bands or orchestras or whatever. It's what I would do. It wasn't a vocation. It was a profession. It was a job.
Yes.
And once that realization hit, I didn't want to do it, and I didn't play for 2 years after that because I didn't want to do that. Now, there's another level on top of vocation, which is called calling. And when you have a calling, you elevate to the top of the chart because it puts a different context behind everything you do.
Yes.
It's all about alignment. It's all about I could talk for an hour.
Perfect. So we'll no, just this move is on. Lovely, lovely. Yes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Going back to my upbringing, I was brought up, as my brother was, to know right from wrong. Didn't mean we always did it, but we certainly knew it. I didn't drink. I mean, obviously, my household was teetotal. It was abstinence. That's the Salvation Army for you. I'm not going to say I am teetotal now, but I might as well be, because I honestly can't remember the last time I had a can of beer or a glass of wine. It was with some dinners. So it's not, I don't have alcohol in the house, not for any other reason. It just doesn't occur to me. But it doesn't call my name. And I can look you in the eye and say, I might be the one person you've ever met who's never even smoked a joint. I have never done drugs of any description other than were prescribed.
Yes.
By the doctor.
Yeah.
And I'm quite happy about that. I'm quite proud about it. Later on in life, when I was heavily involved in the substance abuse environment, the fact that that didn't speak to me meant I could walk into a crack house looking for somebody, grab him and bring him out, because crack didn't speak my name.
What a great expression. Right, it didn't speak my name. I love that.
It didn't call out to me. It had no interest, attraction or hook, potential or otherwise, on my life.
And I'm riffing here on the word calling, because what has called you is the next level, which is the calling.
Yes. Well, the calling on my life, and I'll mention it now, but we'll talk about it later, is helping hurting people, providing help for hurting people. That could be hurting businesses, hurting people, whatever. Anyway, let's get back to this. The next one that shaped me was that nobody knows about. I once bought a commercial print shop.
Ooh.
Yeah. I knew business, I knew accounting, I knew marketing. So, I mean, my first degree was, which I didn't at Stafford, I didn't actually quite finish it because I got bored with it, but it was business and financial economics. So I know how to run a business. I know there's a red line and you have to be above it and in the black, or else, you know, I'm not a government. I can't just print money. We have to make money or we go bust. But that taught me a life lesson, because I wasn't a printer. It taught me this: in business, whatever business you're in, you have to be able to do everything yourself, from sweeping the floor to the finished product. Because if you don't, sooner or later, you'll be held to ransom by somebody who can.
Yes.
It always happens. So that was number two. That was the life lesson that shaped me. Always make sure whatever I get into, I can do everything.
There's a lovely resonance there with you being the copy doctor and having, back in the day, bought a print enterprise, because that's about publishing what it is you've crafted.
Right. Right. The next one was a week in Cozumel in Mexico, or at least on the island, just off Cozumel in Mexico. This was back in 2016. In January 2016, I was looking on the internet one night and I found a post by a guy called Mitch Miller. Now, JC will know who Mitch Miller is. He's done human things.
Yeah.
Yeah. You may or may not know who Mitch Miller is. Mitch Miller is a particularly badass copywriter and marketer. He's made the seven figures easily. He's the guy that will pass the baton to. He's the guy that may or may not give you the time of day, because he doesn't have to. It's not that he's ignorant or arrogant. He just doesn't have to. And the one thing I love about him, he tells you what he thinks. He doesn't care whether it's politically correct. He doesn't care what you think. He won't tolerate being judged. He's just unique. Anyway, I saw a post from him saying, I've got a bit of time. I want to mentor somebody for a month or two, $900, first come, first serve. So I sent him a message instantly. I said, it's me. He said, okay, I'll put you onto my girl and she'll send you a payment. I said, don't bother. I haven't got $900. I said, I haven't even got $450 at the moment. I'm a bit broke. Well, why are you calling me? I said, because something you said makes me think you're the man to help me and teach me. So we went backwards and forwards. He said, I'll tell you what. He said, you have to guarantee that if I work with you for a year, you will not listen to or talk to or work with any other guru, anybody said anything. You haven't. It's me or me. That's how I can do that. He said, when do you think you'll be able to pay the $450, he said, which is now what we seem to be talking about. I said, I don't know, but I'll pay you at some point in the year. But anyway, we got, well, that's me. You know, if you, I have this thing, if you don't ask, you don't get. And if you do ask, the worst somebody can say is no.
Yes.
Sometimes they're not polite about the way they say no, but that's on them, not on me.
Yes.
So anyway, we agreed to work together. We had calls every week or two or whatever. And after about November, we got towards November that year. And he said, I'm having a private mastermind in Isla de Yours or whatever it was called, the little island, Island of the Women, whatever the Spanish is, just off the coast of Cosba. He said, if you can find the airfare, you can come. So I came, and he was charging a lot of money for people to go to that. There was about seven of us in this house for a week. And I flew into Cozumel, and we were all meeting at the airport, waiting for different people to fly in from different places, you know. And I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, what the heck am I doing here? I mean, I knew Mitch and his partner, Matt, because I've been speaking with them for a year anyway. But these other people are coming in. I'm thinking, these people are so outside my comfort zone. I can't even imagine how they do what they do. And for example, there was one guy, he's not, I'm not going to tell you their names because it's not fair. This kid in his 20s, making $34,000 a month.
Woo.
Selling leads to roofers in the States. He wanted to live, his dream was he wanted to live on the, in the harbour in Baltimore, Maryland. And he couldn't afford $1 million for a penthouse back then. So you know what he did? He bought an old houseboat, did it up, moored it. So he got electricity in the harbour in Maryland, in Baltimore. So that's where he lived. That's where he works. And if he wanted to on time, just twiddle around the harbour, he could do that too. Well, how about that for thinking out of the box?
Yes.
So anyway, this guy, what he, the way he used to do his business was he used to watch the weather forecasts all over the States, see where the hurricanes and the tornadoes have been and all the rest of it. He used to find and do a deal with a local roofer and sell them leads. Then he'd saturate the local area with geotagged Facebook ads, say, look, there's going to be a storm. You may or may not lose your roof. You know damn well you won't get a roofer for 6 months, but we'll guarantee we'll get a tarpaulin on your roof at least within 24 hours.
Wow. Great marketing, yes.
So, $34,000 a month. Last I heard from him, he was living in the Middle East and he was pulling down several times that a month. But anyway, that was that. Then there was another guy from Texas and I'm looking at him. You can tell when somebody's even dressed in T-shirt and jeans and cowboy boots by the quality of them, the Calvin Kleins or whatever. You can tell there's money behind the rags. And that guy was pulling down $1 million a month. Part of it was in commercial residential real estate. Part of it was selling trading systems to extreme high net worth individuals. If you were making 600 grand a year as a senior partner of XYZ law firm, you couldn't go to one of his things. And I just blew me apart. Blew me away. And then, you know what? One day, it dawned on me, these were just ordinary, everyday people like me. They were just damn good at what they did. And if they could be that good at what they did, why couldn't I? You know, and they were the nicest people you could meet as well. There was no airs and graces, no high-falutin attitude, no nothing. They took me for who I was. Warts and all, if you like, and that was good. It didn't matter whether I was in their league. Their attitude was, we're all human beings, therefore we're all in the same league.
Yes. We all have the same pain points. We all have the same desires, needs, wants.
Right, yeah. Right. So after that 5 days, I went home. It was December, so Christmas. I started work in January, and January 2017 was my first $10,000 a month.
As the copy doctor.
You know why? Well, as a copywriter, isn't he? I hadn't got to copy doctor yet. But yeah, writing copy.
Yes.
I had my first ever $10,000 a month. The difference was I'd been hanging around with people who were very, very good. Instead of hanging around with mediocre people or people who were on my level, I was hanging around with people that were in the next stratosphere.
Yes.
And I genuinely believe that. It's like Roger Black said, you want to run fast, hang around with people who run faster.
Yes.
It's the same principle.
You're also a real wonderful advocate of what's meant for you won't pass you by, the idea of being attuned to opportunities and windows or doors with a dedicated hinge open.
Yeah. It took me seeing a Facebook ad or Facebook post one Monday night to get me to that place in Cozumel 11 and a half months later to making money as a copywriter starting January the 1st.
By surrounding yourself with brilliant people.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah.
You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show with me, Chris Grimes. If you'd like to be in the show too, or indeed gift an episode to capture the story of someone else with me as your host, then you can find out how, care of the Series Strands at the goodlisteningtoshow.com website. And one of these series strands is called Brand Strand Founder Stories, for business owners like you to be able to tell your company story, talk about your purpose, and amplify your brand. Together, we get into the who, the what, the how, the why you do what you do. And then, crucially, we find out exactly where we can come and find you to work with you and to book your services. Tune in next week for more stories from The Clearing. And don't forget to subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts.